Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Welcome to Wagon Wheel. I'm Jared Kimber. This is the cricket podcast that answers your questions, or some questions, general questions on cricket, actually really specifically niche questions. We've got an absolute bunch of questions on Patreon today. If you do want to support the show, whether you want to support the show or not, if you do want your question answered on this show, the best way is to get first class status on Patreon. So it's just patreon.com/Jared Kimber. And a lot of people have done that today. So we have a lot of questions here that we need to get through, but also super chats. I think a few people have already put some super chats in as well. So we'll be able to get to the Patreon questions and the super chats. Anything else, I'm going to be honest, it's going to be a stretch. But let's start with Patreon. And Adityan says, I assume bowling cross seam or spin would invariably result in the shiny side hitting the deck while the other more than bowling seam up. Do you know of swing bowlers who get pissed off at their teammates for hitting the pitch with the shiny side and ruining reverse swing for them? So generally teams have plans. And so bowlers can kind of control what side of the ball it hits. And with that, it means that if they were trying to get the ball to swing or to reverse swing or whatever it may be, there would probably be some kind of a conversation that is had beforehand. The bowlers usually cause more problems. Mitchell Johnson was a big one for the Australian team. I know Ryan Harris wanted the ball pristine and Mitchell Johnson just couldn't hit it on the right side. Some part-time spinners and have similar issues. And you might get a situation where you're trying to prepare the ball for something or keep it swinging or getting it ready for reverse swing. And you would actually have a conversation with the spinners directly saying, can you land all these on the seam rather than on the shiny side or the rough side or whichever you're doing? Then the opposite happens. Sometimes you might say to your spinners or even to your other seamers, can you do this? So all those sorts of things are conversations that professional cricket teams happen all the time. How you maintain the ball, have conversations about the ball. Very, very normal. Ubik says, who are the main examples of in-swing bowls in recent years? Ishad Sharma, Kemar Roach, they would be two. Stuart Broad, I don't think you would consider. I mean, he was an outswing bowler when he was younger. He then had a problem with his wrist. I suppose the ball started to move away a little bit. You get a lot in women's cricket. Almost everyone, Anya Shrubsole and Megan Shoup instantly come to mind, but kind of every woman seems to bowl in-swing. What is the perfect stock ball for an in-swing bowler? And are they disadvantaged compared to an outswing bowler? I think traditionally people looked for outswing bowlers rather than in-swing bowlers. The thought process was always pretty similar, that you wanted to move the ball away and you wanted to nick batters off. But as we've become more LBW and bowled dependent in this sort of DRS era, bowlers who bowl with in-swing have been, you know, are in an advantage now, but they have to bowl fuller, and it is harder to bowl a in-swinger fuller just because you naturally drop your shoulder when you bowl in-swing. You kind of collapse a little bit, and that pushes the ball that little bit shorter, which is why if you think of Ishant Sharma, he's the perfect example of this, just consistently bowling a meter too short. And probably it was before we knew about the biomechanics of why that was happening. And then throughout the rest of his career, he's purposely trying to bowl a lot fuller, you know, and then DRS comes in and suddenly he goes from being one of the worst bowlers in the world to one of the best. I think if you're an in-swing bowler, I don't think there's any real difference what your best ball is to anyone else. You want to hit the top of off stump. That's the trickiest place for batters to handle. You can't really work the ball over to the leg side all that much. You've still got, you know, caught behind playing. So I think it's very, very similar in that kind of thing. I'm trying to think if there are any other men in-swing bowlers. I think there's a couple more, but they, up until really 2016, 2017, they just weren't that successful. Ubik says, coming from Melbourne, were you at all a footy fan? If so, who's your team? Yeah, I support Magpies, Collingwood. My kids are all members. My daughter loves the Beanies. I went to, 100. I was a Collingwood member, but I was also an MCC member towards the end of my teenage years. I think I got my MCC membership, which I've let lapse because I don't live over there anymore, and it was costing me a fortune. So I went to heaps of games. So I supported Collingwood, and in the VFA or VFL now, I supported Port Melbourne. So I've got jumpers of both of those teams, and I played footy for Epping. My claim to fame in football is playing against Lance Whitnell, where I kicked 2 goals in the first 2 minutes of a game, and we were playing with a huge breeze, and so Whitnell was the ruckman, I think. I think he was playing for a school team at that time, and he ended up playing on me. And stopping me from scoring, and then would go back into the ruck when they had the wind and, I don't know, kicked anywhere between 8 and 13 goals. I can't actually remember how many he got, and I never touched the ball again after he moved on to me. That's probably my best moment in football, followed by work. I mean, it turned out Lance Whitnell was pretty good. Also played indoor cricket against Lance Whitnell. Could not pick my wrong, but absolutely hammered my leg spin everywhere. Samir says, which of the recent West Indies players that ended only really playing white ball cricket would you have the most interest in seeing how they went in tests? I always thought Pollard was really interesting, and I've looked at his first class record a lot, but Russell is the one for me that I think could have been a fantastic player. I think he's the sort of player who could average 30 with the bat and 30 with the ball, be a high impact, but maybe low usage type of player. I fell in love with Andre Russell based on first class scorecards, you know, some of the early scorecards that I saw. And then he was playing for the West Indies A in England, and I saw more of him playing there. And again, you know, really, I just, the looking at him statistically, there used to be this fan who used to accuse me of racism because he said I only liked Andre Russell because of how cool he looked. And I was like, literally found this dude off a scorecard. And not even like a first class scorecard or a test scorecard. It was a first class, but it was probably an A-game scorecard. It was maybe the first time I saw him. And I went back looking at all of his records, just going, this guy's incredible. So I really feel like we missed out on him. I thought Narayan would have been a great test bowler. I wrote an article for Cricinfo about that, and I think he plays about 5 or 6 test matches after that point. I think Puran would be a good one. He's probably the one I'm least interested of that lot that you've said. Obed McCoy would be another really interesting one. I'm trying to see if there's anyone else that's come through. Yeah, I think those are kind of the main ones. Vikas says, why did Sunil Gavaskar play that slow while chasing 334? He made 36 out of 172 balls. He did. Great streaker action in that game too. Either he doesn't understand ODI cricket or there's something to do with fixing. There was fixing in cricket at that stage. Essentially, he just didn't think it was worth chasing. Didn't think that it was a chaseable total. That was the first game ever played at a World Cup. Or actually, they might have played 4 games on that day, but being that it was the host team, I think it was the first game ever played at a World Cup. The idea of scoring 334 in, I think that one was 60 overs, if I remember correctly, just to him didn't make any sense. And so he was protesting it. I don't think he really cared that much about the format. He went on to be, and it's funny because he's remembered as, you know, someone who hated ODI cricket, he went on to be a really good ODI player. Like, I've looked at his record compared to openers of his innings. His strike rate holds up. His average was fine, was really good. Never dominated that format, of course. You know, maybe not as good at it as someone like someone Boycott might have been at times. But yeah, that the reason that he didn't chase it is because he honestly thought it was preposterous, and that there was no way they could chase it. Very MS Dhoni areas, I would say. No one knows 2023 says, if we say that the Invincibles, 80s West Indies and Australia are S-tier teams, I don't know about the Invincibles, by the way. Like, it's one series. It's like putting South Africa there for their two series. I think the Invincibles were a great side, but that's, you can't really compare them to 80s West Indies and, you know, aughts. Do we say aughts? I've said it now. Australia, you know, from that point of view. Would the current Indian and Australian teams be A-tier? And would they be S-tier if they've overplayed at 90% to 100% of the potential every match? I don't think the current Australian team is A-tier, is it? I think perhaps, you know, back a couple of years ago they were. I mean, they've just lost to West Indies at home. I think you'd struggle to have them as an A-tier team based on that. You know, the batting's still a little bit wishy-washy. There's some questions. If you're talking about that period before, you know, maybe the 3 or 4 years before then, probably more of an A-tier level. I think India is an A-tier level team that is perhaps, you know, on the verge of an S-tier level team. I've compared their figures to 80s West Indies and aughts Australia before. They really hold up as a home team, maybe not quite as much away from home. There's a couple other teams. I think there's, 50s England, 60s Australia, South Africa from whatever it is, 2007 to 2014. Those are probably the S-tier teams off the top of my head. And I think India deserves to be, is as good as any of those other teams. What about Baseball's England? Yeah, they're probably a B-tier team. I think that's fair. Jake says, who is the better test batter, Alistair Cook or Kevin Peterson? We haven't fully gone through our rankings yet, Jake, if we're being honest. I think I originally wanted to put Alistair Cook higher and higher. The more research we did, kind of the more we slipped him down. Kevin Peterson wasn't on our original list of top 50 players. Once we factor in strike rate, I do think he does go back up a little bit. And so he might go in there. I would say that it is probably harder to find a Kevin Peterson than is an Alistair Cook, but that doesn't mean that Alistair Cook maybe wasn't the better player all round. I don't think there's much in it between the two of them, if we're being honest. Alistair Cook probably gets a bump because he was an opener, but he was an opener during a pretty good period to be an opener, if we're being honest. Rudra says, I searched on Stats Guru for Indian test pacers who debuted this millennium. And I'd like your opinion. Who would be the better four-man attack? Akash Deep, T. Natarajan, I.R. Siddiqui, and Vinay Kumar. I can't even remember I.R. Siddiqui, by the way. And Virat Kohli. Okay. Ishan Sharma, Zahir Khan, and MS Dhoni. It's probably Ishan Sharma and Zahir Khan, isn't it? I just can't imagine the others are going to get enough wickets. And maybe unless T. Natarajan does something incredible. Same with the spinners from England. Ian Blackwell, Scott Borthwick, Simon Carrigan, Mason Crane versus Ashley Giles, Nasser Hussain, Panesar, Zach Crawley. Blackwell, Borthwick, Carrigan. I thought Carrigan was quite good. But the others I don't rate all that highly. And then Panesar and Giles. I'd probably go Panesar and Giles in that and use the others as part-timers. James says, once Rohit retires, can Gill and Jaiswal be penciled in as all format openers? I don't think Gill wants to be an opener in Test cricket, does he? So I think Gill wants to bat 3 or 4, probably going forward. So no, James, I don't think that is the case. I think there will be some movement around there. He's batting at 3 at the moment. My guess is that Gill probably wants to end up at 4. I don't know if he said that publicly, but it's certainly something I've heard anyway. James says, I saw a Reddit discussion of the worst player to play 100 tests. There's been a lot of this. I've got so many comments about this because of obviously Bairstow playing his 100th test. Who have you got here? You've got Hooper, Bairstow, Ian Healy, Ishant Sharma, Dan Vettori, trying to think if there's is Salim Malik another one that someone mentioned to me? But I actually think his record probably, I mean, when he was trying, he was probably a fantastic player. Unfortunately, not always trying. Let me just see if there's anyone else. Hooper's an interesting one because Hooper's probably more talented than the majority of those other players you just mentioned there. But Hooper just went through periods where he just didn't seem to be caring all that much. And you know, and then when you needed him, he was absolutely fantastic. Like on raw talent, I think he's a lot higher than the rest. But let me just see if I can see anyone else here that deserves, or doesn't deserve, I suppose, in this case, to be on this list. Warner's an interesting one because of his home away record, I would have thought. Who else do we have? Mark Wall probably is a better player than his record shows altogether, but played in a tough era. Is Ian Bell the opposite? Ian Bell played in a great batting era, averaged 42. Been interesting one if you would look at everything else there. Just trying to see if there's any other bowlers. Harbhajan's a name that is mentioned quite a lot, I think, when we're talking about this. I think that's probably a little bit unfair. And Boucher. Boucher is the other one. I find it interesting that people have Healy and not Boucher, because Boucher averages 3 runs more than Healy and was nowhere near that level of a wicketkeeper. So he would be the other one that I would have probably had on this list. I think that's pretty much the majority of them. So who have we got there? Yeah, so we've got Healy. I think Healy's probably the best player. Healy and Vettori are really, really important. Actually, let me break it up this way. I think Hooper was a player who needed to be motivated, and I think Bairstow probably fits with that. I think Healy was an absolutely top-level world-class wicketkeeper and still managed to make runs at a level close to someone like Boucher. Ishant and Vettori are both cases of players who their numbers look worse because of the locations that they played in. If Vettori plays, probably even in Australia or South Africa, he has much better figures as a spinner and went on to be a fantastic batter. And Ishant, of course, the same. You know, if he had bowled outside of Asia rather than inside of Asia for the vast majority of his career, would have been very, very good. So those are players who are much better than their overall numbers probably are. Hooper and Bairstow probably need to be inspired a little bit. And Healy was a world-class wicketkeeper. So I would go Boucher. I think Boucher is the worst player to have played 100 tests. I still don't understand why they could never find a better wicketkeeper or a better batter than Boucher. I've said this before. And it's not to say that Boucher wasn't a good cricketer. Like, if Boucher played 60 or 70 test matches, I think that's absolutely fine. But, like, I just don't believe that there weren't better players than Boucher out in you know, better wicketkeepers who could bat better at certain times, definitely. I know he brought a lot when it came to leadership and tactics, but I would say, and look, if you're the worst player to play 100 test matches, you're still a fantastic player. So this isn't slagging off Mark Boucher or anything, but he's the one that comes to my mind, having the very briefest look through that list anyway, James. And Bairstow's probably in that conversation as well. Aditya says, if you are to start working on the 50 test batters in ODIs in T20s, for tests, do you think any woman batter would break into the list? No, if I did it for women, I would do it for women. I would do a proper list there. So no, it would be a completely different one. I don't think I would do a joint male and female one just because the games are so different. If I did do one, would Meg Lanning make that list? I mean, she's not better than... I mean, if you're doing it from an... You know, how much better you are. I mean, if you do it from the same perspective of... Like, she's probably not better than the 50th best ODI or T20 player, right? Men. Which is the Serena Williams question, right? But that's not what she's great at. She's great compared to the other women, in the same way that Serena Williams is great compared to the other women. So if you do it from that perspective, you would have to have a look at her record compared to everyone else's record when she played. So if you're doing a combined list, I think that's the fairest way if you wanted to put men and women in the same thing. I just wouldn't do it because I think they're just two different sports. So I don't see any reason to do that. But I understand the question. That's a decent question. NC says, do you think there is too much of a taboo around moving batting positions, especially at domestic levels? Oh, NC. I've called it before, the tyranny of the batting order. I think it's a stupid thing. I don't really understand the idea of someone playing. I don't really understand the idea of not using your players when they are, you know, best set up to actually help you as a cricketer by putting them in one batting position. I think we should be doing it with juniors. I think we should be doing it with kids when they get to, you know, the professional level. Everyone should be playing in the best positions that actually help them as a batter, right? That get you closest to winning the games. I don't really see the point you've got the 30 for 3 here as an example. You know, there some players should not be coming out at 30 for 3, even if they're a number 5. And there are other players who bat at number 6 who should be coming out when you're 200 for 1. I just think cricket needs to be a lot smarter when it comes to batting positions all the way through. Let's take a quick break here. I am Jared Kimber. This is The Wagon Wheel. And here is our sponsor. All right, welcome back. Richard says, I just watched the film debut of Irfan Pathan. Who is the best professional cricketer turned actor? Oh, this is easy. C. Aubrey Smith. So if you don't know who he is, go and look him up. I think he captained England, if I'm not mistaken, against South Africa. Took a 5-wicket haul on debut in Test cricket, but was a fantastic first-class cricketer. And I don't know how many films he was in. I don't know how many films he was in altogether. But it was a lot. Like, you know, I've talked about it before. He starred in Tarzan. I think I've called it the most athletic film of all time. I think it was Tarzan and Johnny Weissmuller. Johnny Weissmuller was Tarzan and C. Aubrey Smith was the random England person. He's probably the best because he was a proper actor. Dale Steyn, would he be up there for one of the worst? I'm trying to think of who other cricketers who've been acting. I know there's some cricketers obviously in the backgrounds of things. Srisanth didn't look like a particularly good actor. Obviously, those films were not in my language, but, you know, he has a presence. I'm not sure he was a particularly good actor. I'm trying to think of who else. Am I missing anyone else? Went on to be actual actors. Those are the ones off the top of my head. Trying to think if there was any other cameos. There's been cameos, I suppose, by other cricketers, but whether they are proper acting or not, I don't know. C. Aubrey Smith, absolutely. Not even close. Graham says, why are left arm finger spinners called slow left arm orthodox? And do you know where the name came from? Oh, I don't off the top of my head. Might be one for Abhishek Mukherjee. But the idea is that they couldn't be called off spin because we gave it a stupid name to begin with. Off spin shouldn't be called off spin. And leg spin shouldn't be called leg spin. They probably should have been called finger spin and wrist spin. And that would have been a lot easier because then you would have right arm finger spin and left arm finger spin. And right arm wrist spin and left arm wrist spin. But unfortunately, we called them leg spin and off spin. And so the name sort of became something a little bit different. And so you have slow left arm orthodox and then slow left arm. And then you have left arm unorthodox, which is even more weird. William says, it is often said as a truism that wrist spin isn't suited to English and Indian conditions. Is that true and why so? It's about the pace, really. I've got a ball in front of me, so apologies to anyone listening at home. But when you bowl wrist spin, you put a lot more revolutions on the ball. Obviously, when you put more revolutions on the ball, it is a little bit slower. If you have slow conditions like New Zealand, well, New Zealand might be one of them, but like India and England, it means the more revolutions you put on the ball, the slower it is. So if you look at the great Indian wrist spinners, you're looking at Anil Kumble and Chandrasekhar, right, who are just a little bit faster through the air than everyone else and probably didn't put as many revolutions on the ball as maybe some of the other traditional wrist spinners that were coming through. And so with finger spin, you're not putting as much revolutions on the ball. And the best way to tell this, William, now that we have access to all this technology, is the fact that a back of the hand slow ball, which is essentially a wrong-un, slows down a lot more than an off-cutting slow ball. So we understand that through science now. So I would assume those are the main reasons why that is the case. But it doesn't mean that wrist spin can't be successful in England. And it doesn't mean that wrist spin can't be successful in India because we have seen that as well. But it means that finger spin is more suited to those conditions. And I would have thought that perhaps in England, where cutters can be bowled, as a finger spinner, you could probably bowl cutters, and we've certainly seen finger spinners who probably do bowl more cutters in England. And then in India, you don't have to spin the ball as much as a finger spinner because you're getting so much help off the surface. So there might also be those as advantages as well. Will says, what is it with New Zealand constantly falling to pieces against Australia? Should every other team wear replica baggy greens when playing the Kiwis? I don't know. You know, we're back here again, and I wish I had some great answers for everyone. We talked about it in the recent Overthrowers podcast, and I don't have any answers, really. You know, we've seen periods where New Zealand have done well. Maybe the Stephen Fleming teams was a period where I thought they did quite well. Obviously, in the 80s, New Zealand were a better team than Australia. And so, you know, there is certainly something there. But overall, I don't have a great answer for this. It's gone well beyond logic. I just hope eventually it's just not a theme for New Zealand cricket going ahead, because it kind of devalues them of, yeah, they're really good and they're plucky, but not against Australia. It doesn't quite fit as well, does it? Bloody says, Murali is one of the top contenders to be a GOAT bowler with his highest wickets in Tests and ODIs, but he does not seem to be a superstar. Even in Sri Lanka, it seems like Jayawardene, Asanga and Malinga are more household names. Yeah, but I did a podcast with Fernando with once, and I said to him, like, it's ridiculous that Murali is not the most famous cricketer in Sri Lanka and not that thought of as the best. Relative to total sporting achievement, is Murali the least culturally impactful, unpopular cricketer in cricket, even all major sport? Not seen a single hockey match, but I know who Wayne Gretzky is. My profile picture on social media was Murali for 10 years. I think the stuff around his action is obviously a major part of it. But he also, he was a cheeky guy, but he didn't have that superstar energy, right? Like, compare him to Virat, A.B. de Villiers could be another perfect example of this. I could see how in a couple of years A.B. de Villiers is kind of forgotten a little bit. So, you know, Warne was around when Murali was around. I've never done, ranking the bowlers. I think obviously Murali has a solid argument to be the greatest of all time. But when you do break his figures down a little bit more compared to Warne, you do understand why Warne, even though he didn't have as good a record, might have been a slightly better bowler. But that doesn't mean that Murali wasn't absolutely fantastic and is still in that conversation. I think his ethnicity in Sri Lanka plays a big part in it. Not a great public speaker. He's not gone on to be a commentator. Just all the kinds of little things that help with legacy. And great players sometimes do, No one talks about Lance Gibbs anymore, right? Like, sometimes you're just the wrong player at the wrong time. There's a lot of great English batters who we don't even mention anymore. And it's these things just happen to players. Like Herbert Sutcliffe doesn't. When we talk about great batters, is Herbert Sutcliffe in people's mouths in the top 15 names? Probably not, right? And yet, Herbert Sutcliffe, arguably one of the greatest batters of all time. So I think these things do happen to certain players. It's funny you talk about, players. I mean, Karl Malone in the NBA is probably a player that instantly comes to my mind. I think Karl Malone's the third leading scorer of all time. For a long period, was the second leading scorer. It has a great nickname, but even before all the murky stuff with marrying, teenager and whatever else he was involved with and everything else, kind of wasn't put on that level. Like, you can be a high production person and maybe not be as romantic to certain kinds of fans and, have have controversies that hold you back. And I think with Murali, the action certainly plays a big part of that. And then, as we said, he was a Tamil guy in Sri Lanka. I still think it's one of the incredibly, I think there should be a book written about Murali and the Tamil conflict directly and his position in Sri Lankan culture. I don't know if it's something for Fidel or Estelle or someone else, an outsider, but I still think it's a phenomenal book because just Murali has a really complicated legacy within Sri Lanka, let alone within cricket. I'll get to Vivax in a moment, but let me just take another quick break. Jared Kimber here on the Wagon Wheel. No, yeah, it is the Wagon Wheel. One day I'll remember what podcast I'm doing at the right time. Today is not that day.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Vivek says, following up with something from a conversation with Sanga. If you guys haven't listened to it yet, we did a Red Inca with him talking about great batting. Obviously, it's for my book, but we put it up straight away because Sanga's got a business that he is also trying to get some attention for. So he says, is there anything that you'd have done differently if you're part of England's Red Bull setup to get more out of Joss Butler, their test batter? I suppose if he played now, he'd probably just be more, he'd be better off. I thought Joss Butler was always going to struggle as a Red Bull player because he didn't have a background of making Red Bull runs. And I think it is very, very hard if that is the kind of player that you are. I think they put undue pressure on him when they brought him into the side and made him a specialist number seven batter, of which JP Duman and a couple of Bangladeshi players are the only players really in the last 20 years to have done that role. I think that cluttered him a little bit. I think he would have preferred to play as a wicketkeeper, but they didn't want to do that because of everything else. So I think they made a mistake bringing him in the way that they did. So I suppose that would be one thing, try and bring him in when he's in the right position. They also batted him too high. Like, if he's never made professional runs before, batting him at number five was probably never going to work. He needed to be at six, probably seven, consistently. So that was another thing I wouldn't have done. I think if he was in... I remember him playing in Sri Lanka when he played really, really well. And every test match, he came in with a completely different theory. I would have loved if he'd done the same thing against seam bowling. As a T20 analyst who had to work against him, bowl at a foot and a half outside off stump, slightly back of a length, and have as many slips in as you feel comfortable with. And you know he's going to nick one. Just hope that it goes to hand. In a test match, that's a bigger thing. So how could... You could almost say to him, well, look what you did in Sri Lanka, where there was one game when you ran down the wicket, there's another game when you swept everything, there's another game where you reverse swept everything, right? Why not do the same thing against seam? You know where they're going to bowl to you. You know that's your weakness. How can you overcome it? Which I suppose is a more Baz Ball way of looking at it. I think that would have been really, really interesting with Joss Butler. I'm not sure if that would have worked, but I think that would have been interesting. Ben says, I'm interested in unconscious bias with umpires. Is there a stat tracking how often the umpire's call stays with the home side? I don't have that stat. I don't know what the situation is, but we know for a fact that, yeah, it is, that umpiring is definitely, and this is all sports, not just cricket, of course, that the home crowd does play a big part in it. You know, the loudness. The best way of looking at it is go to a cricket game when there is a decent home crowd in and not too many away supporters, and watch what happens when an appeal is made by the opposition. It's silence and then laughter quite often, right? And a little bit of mocking. And then go to a game where a similar kind of appeal is done by the home team. There's no way that unconscious bias can't play a part. And, you know, I think the ICC is aware of that as well, but you can't stop that. That's just never going to go away. Teams like India and England who tour with big supporting groups are at a massive advantage over other teams. There's no doubt about that. Ben says, last Wagon and Wheel, you're talking about interesting conversations in basketball over who has the claim to be the best player ever. Is it boring and shame that cricket and cricket media that our best player is undisputable? Well, I mean, tell the internet that. It happened so long ago and realistically, no one will ever surpass them. I mean, I don't know. It probably makes the conversations better. As I think me and Ian Bishop might have talked about this, which will be a podcast eventually, but I chatted to Bishop about my book as well, and he was talking about the Jordan v. LeBron debate and how boring it is and everything else. So basketball fans might tell you that they would rather have one player who is absolutely indisputably the greatest player of all time. You know, does it make it better for the baseball that they have Babe Ruth? Although Otani might go to those sorts of areas, I suppose. But yes, I understand what you're saying, but I think there's enough other things for cricket to argue about on any daily basis that I don't think it's like the end of the world. Probably for me, it'd be more fun. So maybe it would be for other people, but it would also get incredibly tedious and boring. NC says, do you think there's too much of a tab? Oh, I've done that one. Okay. No One Knows says, I've been doing my analysis with the true metrics using Python with true average and true strike rate. I took the batting position into account as well, since opening batter in the 15th over would have different numbers to a number 7 in the 15th over. That's very fair. Once I did that, I found out that Virat in 2023 had a negative true strike rate, where just looking at the overall distribution, he had a positive true strike rate. Yeah, the problem with that is, and I get why you've done it, and I don't think it's a bad way of looking at things, but Virat Kohli had to bat until the 15th over. He's earned that, hasn't he? And yes, he won't have a similar strike rate in the 15th over compared to other players, compared to other openers, because there's probably, you know, Chris Gayle and, you know, other players who've opened the batting are now smashing the ball everywhere by that point. But I do think that is discounting the fact that he has survived until the 15th over. So let's say you've now given him a negative true strike rate and another player has a positive true strike rate, but that other player might not have even got to the 15th over all that much, right? He got through all those boring overs into a point where he did that. So I can kind of see it both ways. I think with true strike rate or true economy or any of those things, you could get to a point where you have, you know, adjusted true strike rate, which is what you're probably talking about, which I think is also fair and is another way of looking at it. But I think it's kind of unfair on him from the perspective that he had to bat to that point. So I'd have to think more about all that sort of stuff. You can send it through to me on Discord. If you want, for those who don't know, you know, on our Patreon, we have a Discord channel as well. You can send them through and we can have a look at them there. James says, is underage international cricket more beneficial for player development than just staying in the adult domestic league for that period? A lot of kids get hyped up at 19 World Cup, but are scarcely heard of again. Yeah, I suppose that's the same with everywhere. Like, it's impossible to really tell how a 17, 18, 19-year-old will be when they're 28, right? When they've gone through all kinds of physical and mental developments and, you know, players who we didn't think would be very good will go on to be great, and players who we thought would be great will go on to be nothing. I think we're lucky in cricket that we have the ability for kids to play against adults at a young age, and I think that's a much better way of developing players. I think if you look at the basketball development of the American kids who will play against other kids compared to the Europeans who, you know, at 15, Luka Doncic is having to move a chain-smoking 7-foot Turkish player out the way. I think that is probably a much better way of developing them. And I think that goes back to the Australian style of, you know, I probably played my first senior game at 10 or 11. And the hardest year in my career was the year after I stopped playing junior cricket. I just had to play seniors on my own. I felt that was really, really tough. And I'd been playing senior cricket for 2 or 3 years by that stage, on and off for 2 and 3 years. And I believe that junior cricket and senior cricket is so different. So I'm much more interested in how the under 18, under 19 players go against senior players than anywhere else. But I still think we should have a showcase for the best younger players in the world. So I don't think that means it goes away. But I'm much more interested in how a 17-year-old goes up against a 27-year-old than I am a 17-year-old against an 18-year-old. Nadika says, as someone who remembers Sam Aguirre very fondly, I'm happy he was mentioned in the Sanger pod. Is he a classic example of a batter looking good because he played in a batting-friendly era? Is he better than all the current Sri Lanka batters? Or is it just feels like that because it's harder to bat nowadays? we went through his records, and I don't have them in front of me. I'm trying to remember if I could search them really quickly. I probably can't. But yeah, we certainly went through his advanced numbers, and I thought he still stood up pretty well, is my memory. There we go. I'm just trying to find if I can find some of the numbers here. No, I can't find them in front of me. Sorry. But yeah, I thought his numbers still held up pretty well. I don't think you're talking about a well above average level talent. I don't think he was top 50 of all time, or top 70 of all time, or anything like that. But I think when you do go through that record, there was certainly a lot there. I think he was a better player than a lot of the current players. That said, he did play in a great batting era, and I think you also have to have a look at that. But my memory was he still did pretty good. Ali says, what do you see the future of some of these T20 leagues? Would some of them go bust or consolidate? I wish they would consolidate. Will some of them bust? I think a lot of them would just become feeder leagues. If you follow European football or European basketball or, other sports, there's plenty of smaller leagues out there that exist. They're just not major leagues. So, yeah, I think some will disappear. There's probably too many. I think they should consolidate. I don't think that's on the cards, because I don't think any of these cricket boards like each other. And so that's usually the issue with stuff like that. But, I would say Australia and New Zealand's a very good chance of one day being a combined league. I don't really see the point of having them as two separate leagues as they currently stand. Where else would you have something like that? SA20, could we have Zimbabwe and Namibian teams in it one day? Would be another obvious one. I would love it if Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Nepal and Pakistan all got together and had a league. I don't see that as likely. But yeah, so I do think there is some chances for that. But I think most of the leagues that are sort of the main league in a country, even if they're not great leagues, probably have some reason for existing. What I would see is a lot of them going from being international leagues, so leagues with major international players, down to leagues where they're just local leagues with, maybe even if they have international players, they'll just be experienced, no-name international players, which we're already starting to see happen, I think, in some of those leagues. Abhinav says, if a player who is otherwise deserving to be in the team gets hit on the head multiple times, how ethical is it for the board to no longer consider him if the player himself is not interested in retiring? So I'm assuming this is about Will Pukowski. I think, Victoria certainly can keep considering him. So he's still there. And the board are still doing everything they can to support Will Pukowski. Mental health things, medical things, they're trying to get him right to play again. But in order that you can't just, you talk about how ethical it is. It's not also not ethical for Australia to pick him for Australia when he hadn't been making runs in Sheffield Shield cricket. Like, you don't want to put a player who routinely gets hit in the head in a situation where he's facing faster bowlers on a harder test wicket, right? So that would be very, very, very tough as well. I think they're trying to support him as best that they can. The idea that he would automatically come back into the test team if he hasn't played in 6 months, when he's not, like, it would be different if he played 25 or 30 test matches and everyone knew exactly where he was and, you would have a Rishabh Pant type situation, right? That's the kind of player that you kind of rush back into the side. You might still want to make sure he has a couple of warm-ups so he feels happy again. That's not where Will Pukowski is, right? I mean, if you look at Will Pukowski at the moment, his overall record is a batting average of 45 in first-class cricket, and he automatically gets back into the Victorian team every time he's available. So that is the side that he's going back in, but he's played one test, so he wasn't actually a regular test player at all. So the idea that he would come back into the test team, if he played a lot more test cricket and was comfortable in it and everything else, I think that would make sense. So I think your question's wrong here. I don't think I don't think you're being ethical. The idea of throwing a guy in who's played one test every time he's fully healthy again, I think would be detrimental in his mental health. And also, I think he would get hit in the head a lot as well, which obviously is part of the issue here. From a Victorian standpoint, he's an automatic member of that Victorian team. He's very comfortable in first class level. He understands the game and everything else, and they do bring him back. So one of his professional teams is doing what you're saying, and the other one he's barely played for. I think it would be a really different situation if he was averaging 42 or 43 for Australia over 15 or 20 tests. I think then you would have an argument, but no, I can't. I don't think that's I would feel uncomfortable if Australia was throwing him back in for his second test match. You know, he was really struggling to make runs in first class cricket not that long ago. Like, this is not a guy that you want to ruin. And a part of the reason that they're so softly with him is because he's got two issues, right? And they might both be linked to each other, but they're two separate issues, right? Of one of which is quite obviously the concussions and everything else, but the other one is the mental health. Do you really want to throw someone in who's played one test for his second test if he hasn't played cricket in 4 months just because you think he's in the top six players? And you look at him, so in 2021, he averaged 118. 21, 22, he averaged 36. Played two matches in 22, 23 and averaged 15. And played seven matches this season and averaged 31 with 100. That's not a guy you want to throw back in. You want to look after him. I think it's actually unethical to throw him back into the Australian side just because you think he's in the best six batters in the country. I'd be very disappointed if a team did that to him. All right. Another quick break here on Wagon Wheel, and we'll come back with more questions.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Ian says, the interview with Kumar Sangakkara was fantastic. Thank you very much. And it got me thinking of the players you haven't interviewed or spoken to. Who would you most like to currently, which historical cricketer would you love to have interviewed? George Headley and Javed Meindad probably be two that I would love to have, obviously with Headley, it's not going to work. Javed Meindad, I think it's very unlikely that I'm going to get through to Javed Meindad. I think they were so different in the ways that they thought about batting. Who else do we have that I would love to chat to that I probably won't get to? I mean, I'd love to get hold of Rahul Dravid, but I just don't know if he's going to have time. But he's certainly another player that I would love to sit down and chat to him. Probably know me and Rahul, it would go for hours, that conversation. Callis is someone I think would be very, I'm not sure if he'd be great at talking about it, but I kind of feel like if you got him onto the right topic, he would be. I might actually make a play at Callis. I wanted to talk to Mahela as well, but because he was just a little bit too busy and didn't want to be involved in it as much and probably didn't have something to sell like Kumar did. I'm trying to think of other guys. Sunil Gavaskar, probably another one. I'll try and make a play at him. He would be really, really handy to get hold of. I think everyone else, I'm not sure I'm saying I'll get everyone. So I've got a pretty good list of players and I'm trying to have a couple of players who are greats themselves and a couple of other players who are just in that level below. And then a couple of other players who are well below because those are the ones who often talk about it the best and can explain the differences. It's sometimes hard for the very good players to explain why players are great, whereas some of the players below. So I've got a good mix. I've gone back into the 1950s. I've got 50s, 60s, 70s, pretty much covered. And now I've got a lot of modern guys that I'm going through at the moment, trying to make sure that I've got people from multiple countries. Oh, Andy Flower is someone I would love to chat to as well, but I think he's going to be too busy in this period as well. But yeah, I think those are the ones. And then, you know, going back, obviously you would love to talk to Trumper, Bradman, Ranji, Grace, those sorts of guys, I think would all be fascinating as well. GD says, after Rohit Sharma questioned the hunger of the likes of Iyer and Kishan because they took a break from Ranji matches to get ready for the IPL, they've now been excluded entirely from central contracts. Pant will probably play as a batter for most of the IPL and his contract too has been downgraded. Is this a case of India being spoiled for choices? Sorry, I just realized I clicked on the wrong one. From the obvious talent too soon? Or is it ego trip on part of the administration, captain, coach, selectors? They're probably, look, I don't agree with it. And I would like to have thought that they said beforehand to these players, if you are missing these games, you will miss out on your contract. And I don't believe that is the case. And so I'm not a big fan of that side of thing. It probably is from the talent point of view. I mean, Iyer is obviously a contractable player. And Ishan Kishan is probably also on that level. So I think it's a bit ridiculous to be in this sort of situation. But yeah, I think we've seen things like this before. You know, maybe the Dean Jones Australia situation is another one where they just thought we don't have to deal with Dean Jones. And so we're not going to deal with Dean Jones. So I do think there is, you know, an issue there, all things considered. Oh, wrong one. Adinian says, you talk about Wooden or Key being very close to the ceiling of what is humanly possible in terms of bowling sheer pace. I'm not sure I've ever discussed that, have I? I mean, we don't know what that ceiling is. So I don't know if bowlers can't get faster. Where do you think the ceiling of pace is for women's cricket and how close are we hitting the ceiling? I still think it's very possible. I don't think we have got even close to getting the best. Like if you, Wooden or Kia are just absolutely top tier athletic people and you can put Sean Tate and Brett Lee and Shoaib Akhtar and Geoff Thompson into that level. I don't think we've got anywhere near finding the absolute best athletic top tier talent in women's cricket. So I would assume that women will be able to break the 130 barrier. I don't know what the ceiling is, but I don't know what the ceiling is on men's cricket either. But yeah, I definitely think women can do that. I just don't think we've, as a sport, you know, it's very recently that we've started fighting for the best athletes in cricket. James says, how differently do you think it would have played out if Murali had been called by a neutral umpire in Melbourne Test rather than Daryl Hare? It's interesting. I suppose now neutral umpires don't even call throwing on the field anymore, do they? Yeah, I think it was extra heated because of Daryl Hare. I think Daryl Hare, and it wasn't the only time he made himself into this. I didn't think he was a particularly good umpire. I didn't think he was very fair. And I think he tried to make himself the story too often. You know, Murray Erasmus is, you know, I said this on the podcast the other day. I thought Murray Erasmus was a very empathetic umpire. I thought Daryl Hare was the opposite of that kind of umpire. So, yeah, I think if you take Daryl Hare's personality out of it and the nationalism out of it, would have been very different. Whether that changes the overall part of Sri Lanka versus the world that sort of becomes next and then the science part of it, I don't think so, but I'm not sure. GD says, with all the debate around how the development of young English spinners will suffer from a lack of exposure in the county system, is it time for England to save Test cricket again by coming up with a second 11 A Lions International Test League? I've been saying this for like 10 or 15 years, GD. Like, I don't really understand why India, Australia and England haven't already done this. And it's now tougher to do than ever before because you'd almost have to do it with really, really young players because anyone who's talented, who's not playing the national team, is probably playing franchise cricket somewhere. But yes, I've always thought this was the way forward of having, you know, some sort of a second 11 league. I think I reckon I want to say I wrote about this in 2007 or 2008, that Cricket Australia should have done a deal with Sri Lankan cricket at that time to start their own academy in Colombo, or not even in Colombo, it could have been anywhere, and have a reciprocal arrangements where, you know, a couple of Sri Lankan players could, you know, be involved with that, but also come back to the Australian academies and use some of the academy situations there. Why would you not do that? Why would you not be in a situation where you're trying to fast track your players' development? And now, because of the league situation, I don't know if we can see that, but certainly with younger players, I just don't understand why these boards that have money are not investing in these sorts of things. If you're Indian cricket, why not have a 3 month a year academy in South Africa? So yes, 100% agree with this, because it's my idea. I think even if you talk to some of the old England players, this is something that they talked about a little bit. You know, it helps teams so much when you've got when you walk. I mean, Michael Vaughan, I think I want to say he played so much A cricket before he played for England. It was a huge advantage to him. I think I'm right. I think it's Michael Vaughan the players use as an example of that. That's it for the Patreon questions. Huge thanks again. Remember, patreon.com/JaredKimber. It's taken up almost the entirety of this podcast, those questions, but some great and interesting ones in there. And thank you to everyone who did. But we've got some in the room as well. Of some super chats from Saurabh Javari Music, who says, who are your favorite left-handed Fab Four currently? In order of preference would be great. Oh, well, this is a really pedant point, but the Fab Four are partly the Fab Four because they are all of a very similar age and were developing at the same time. It's why Baba Azam, like Pakistanis, kept trying to force him into the Fab Four. And it's like, that's not how it works. Like, it was a very, you know, it was like everyone being in Liverpool at the right time. My favorite left-hand batters, you probably have Jaiswal, Khawaja, Head. Would you have Duckett? Conway seems to have slipped back a little bit. Am I missing another obvious left-hander? Those are the ones that instantly come to my mind. I need to go through it a little bit more to have a look in case I'm missing someone. I'm just trying to think if there's another left-hander who is kind of that level at the moment. So, I mean, Duckett is very, very recent, isn't he? I suppose Jaiswal is as well. But certainly they've been putting the numbers on the board, so it would be hard to argue against either of them. So I'm trying to think if I'm missing anyone else in the last couple of years. Elgar probably would have been in it at his best, but it obviously had slipped off a little bit. Not that it matters anymore because he's retired. Warner would have been in it at times as well. Stokes, but I'd probably have Duckett ahead of Stokes at the moment. Oh, Karuna Ratne would be right up there as well, wouldn't he? And Rishabh Pant. Oh, yeah, so it does get a little bit tougher. But yeah, if you're asking right now, I probably have the list that I would have, but obviously Karuna Ratne, you could exchange him for Duckett, and Pant would probably come in for him when fully fit as well, I think. And then obviously Shanto, because Shanto is about to average 80 in Test cricket and make you all look like fools. Samit, who had a super chat, recent crick picks made me ponder Azharuddin. Despite controversies, an extremely stylish batter. I believe he is among the finest at slip and infield in his era. How would you rate him? I think in my book, Samit, if you have a look at it, I described Azharuddin as the most delicious beer that you've ever tasted till you work out that he's taken a piss in it. I think he was a fantastic batter. I love the way that he went about his innings. Gabe was an absolutely brilliant slip fielder. Probably not top 50 test batter of all time, I wouldn't have thought. But a fantastic player who obviously had other issues that eventually led to his downfall. DM95. Oh, no, I've already done this question now. Sorry, DM. You almost had your question answered, but someone else asked it. Shrikant says, it's cool to be able to have already the greatest left-arm wrist spinner of all time. Other candidates, Chuck Fleetwood-Smith, Paul Adams, Brad Hogg, Gary Sobers. Certainly not Gary Sobers. Certainly not Brad Hogg if you're talking test cricket. If you're talking limited overs, Brad Hogg's probably quite high up there. Paul Adams has a lot more wickets. I think Kuldeep Yadav's probably on that Chuck Fleetwood-Smith level. We never saw the best of Chuck Fleetwood-Smith, of course. Those who did see him said that he was as good as Bill O'Reilly but left-armed. In fact, Bill O'Reilly said he was more talented than him. And Bill O'Reilly wasn't a shy person about his own talent. So I think Kuldeep's probably on the Chuck Fleetwood-Smith level, but you know, he has to go past kind of the Paul Adams, Brad Hogg, you know, overall wickets. He might have gone past Paul Adams. I know, but Paul Adams played a little bit of limited overs cricket. But yeah, there's a very big chance that Kuldeep Yadav is within that. I mean, the truth is that, you know, Waqar Salim Keel and Zahir Khan, all of these guys are on the shortlist and also could end up being on that list just because we've had so few throughout the history of cricket. Great question, though. Rupesh says, who is the cricketer who made you fall in love with cricket? Ponting. No, I fell in love with cricket before I ever saw any international players. So I grew up in a family of cricketers. I was taken to watch my father bowl when I was probably about a week and a half or 2.5 weeks old, depending on who tells the story. My favorite cricketers when I grew up, when I was very young, were club cricketers. There's a guy called Westy who occasionally tweets me now, and I've talked about him in a few podcasts. He was the first great batter I saw, right? And he was, you know, just a player who played in the ones at Camberfield Cricket Club. You know, guys like Mick Gibbs and my dad as fast bowlers. They were the guys that I grew up watching and really enjoying playing. Really isn't until the Victorian team, so that kind of Simon O'Donnell, Dean Jones, Darren Berry, Ian Harvey, Matthew Elliott, Damien Fleming, they were the kind of the first professional heroes that I had. And then that followed into the Australian team at that stage. But yeah, I was more than in love before I, you know, really even knew international cricket was a thing. Ikant says, also Ponting was like, he wasn't good till I was 16. I'm very old. Ikant says, which big games have South Africa actually choked? Oh, God. You can't just throw that in as a random super chat. I've done a video on this when they lost to the Netherlands in the T20 World Cup. Go back and have a look because I go through a lot of those games in the different situations and how they came about in. The 99 semifinal is great because they choked, but Australia choked probably as hard in that particular game. Rupesh says, what do you think of the BCCI cancelling Ishan Kishan and Shreyas Iyer's contracts? Obviously, we've already talked about that. I don't like the way they were used. I'd be very disappointed if they did it and they hadn't warned them that that was going to happen beforehand. I don't like the cancelling of contracts in that way. I've said this before. I don't like the way the boards use contracts in general. Anish says, have you seen Usman Tariq bowling action in the PSL? He pauses in between action. Pre-2024, Ash and Reina used to pause in between action. Yeah, so some off-spinners do it naturally. I think Ajmal probably had it. We've seen bowlers like Ashwin and Reina and Xavier Doherty do it on purpose. I believe you're not supposed to be able to do it. So I think he will probably be told going forward not to do it. I've only seen little bits of him, though. It wasn't something that I've studied massively at the moment. But yeah, they want to get rid of, I mean, it's a baseball trick, right? The stutter pitch, Satchel Paige had it and was eventually banned in baseball. We never had a big issue with it in cricket. I would say Xavier Doherty was probably one of the first people. When was he? 2012? So 2010, 2011, Xavier Doherty was probably one of the first players in the world who did it a lot. And then I think Ashwin and Reina. There was a couple of other bowlers as well. Fees maybe as well. And Ajmal, as I said before. So it did get pretty popular. It was sort of taken down and changed. So I would have to have a look to see how big is, because off spinners do sometimes just have a pause. If you look at Chris Gayle, he's a perfect example of someone who just has that natural pause in his bowling. Sometimes he plays it up as well, but it is a thing that off spinners have a little bit more, that kind of rock back. But yeah, you shouldn't, if you're doing it unnaturally, then I think that's when there should be an issue.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Somebody, Nathan, says, how did you get rid of your tribal love for Australia? I've said it before. I'm just not a very patriot. I don't understand patriotism. When I was growing up, I loved the part of Melbourne that I was from. You know, it was all I knew, and I was very, very proud of coming from the northern suburbs and, being from Epping and playing cricket for Camberfield and on all those sorts of things. Why is that less important to me than being Australian? I don't know what people in Western Australia were doing, right? Like, they're like thousands of kilometers away, right? Like a 4 or 5 day drive from where I live. Why would I be sitting there thinking to myself that I've got something more in common with them than I do with the people who are close to me? So patriotism never made any sense to me. I look at countries like America and India, and it baffles me that people are so patriotic in those countries. I'm like, I've been to Texas and I've been to Seattle. They aren't alike, right? You know, I've been to Kerala and I've been to Ranchi. They're not alike. Different languages, different culture, different belief systems. And so patriotism to me just doesn't make a lot of sense. I grew up, if you're asking from a cricket perspective, I grew up loving the local cricketers that I knew and then loving the Victorian cricketers. The Australian cricketers were already third on my depth chart. By the time I got there, you know, it wasn't the same. I think I'm much more tribal with Victorian cricketers than I am with other things, but I think I'm just wired differently than other people. I don't need to, we're all part of the human race. I don't need this feeling of belonging to you. I don't need to feel like you and I are similar in order for me to feel comfortable. I understand that we're both mammals trying to do the best we can, and there are other mammals out there doing different things. I just find patriotism just nonsense and bullshit. I mean, look at how many of us live in countries that only exist because someone else drew lines on a map. Like, Australia could very well be the east coast of Australia and New Zealand as a country and Western Australia as a separate country. So I don't, you know, and then you've got India and Pakistan where people grew up together in one country and then separated into other countries. Then you've got Afghanistan where someone put a big squiggly line down the middle and on one side you're Pakistan, on one side you're Afghanistan, but you're both from the same tribes, the same Afghan culture, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me that, you know, it's just a construct. And I've never truly understood that part of it. And so it doesn't hit me the same way that it hits other people. And I'm also not religious and think, I think about religion in exactly the same way. Like, it's nonsense. Of course it's nonsense. We don't listen to people from 2000 years ago about, what they thought about the world. If they have a good scientific fact and we can expand on it, we can prove it or anything else, we need to go with it. But the vast majority of what people thought 2000 years ago is fucking bullshit, right? So why would I then believe fables and fairy tales put together in a book for religion? It never made any, that sort of stuff never makes any sense to me. Now, it's probably just me being wired differently than other people, right? And that's fine. Other people need religion and they need patriotism. I just have never had much useful things like that. It's just not the way that I am. As I said before, cricket played a huge part in who I am as a person. It probably stopped me from killing myself. It definitely stopped me from killing myself when I was young. It has played such a bigger part in my life than my accident of birth. Now, my accident of birth is why I got into cricket. So you can't ever take the Australian cricket out of me. And it's how I learned cricket, you know, from a club level, from a state level, from an international level and everything else. So I'm still really proud of being an Australian, but I'm really proud of being a Victorian. And I'm really proud of coming from Melbourne. And I'm really proud of coming from the northern suburbs of Melbourne. And I'm really proud of being part of the culture in London, right? I'm really proud of all these different things in my life. Why would I suddenly think one of them is so much more important than everything else? It's a construct. It's nonsense. As I said, it's probably just the way that I am wired, and it's a little bit different than other people. But I find it very, very hard to get patriotic. And the older I get, the less patriotic I am. And yet it doesn't mean I don't love where I'm from, because I do love where I'm from. And it made me the person I am. And also, I do love Australia as a construct. It's just that I love all these other constructs as well. So it's easy for me to go, oh, well, I can just put that to the side for a minute and have a look at this other thing. And maybe it's not as easy for other people. Maybe some people get their identity through their nationalism. And I don't think I ever did. I just don't think that was ever me, right? And I say this to someone who wore a flag when we went to cricket games and all sorts of things. But it's just not the person I am. Anyway, we've gone well away from cricket podcast here. Spiritual Hour with Jared Kimber. Patriotism, good or bad? But thank you very much to everyone for listening again. This is The Wagon Wheel. Remember, Patreon, if you want to support us there, it is patreon.com/Jared Kimber. And then you can get your questions in. Really sorry to everyone in the room who didn't get to ask many questions on this today. If you haven't listened to the Sanger podcast, please go and listen to that. It's on this channel and you can find it. And also, we did a really good video, me and Estelle, on the ghost cricket leagues of the French women. It's a great story. And if you haven't heard it before, certainly go over and take a look at that. But thank you to everyone for your support. And I will see you again on the next time when we do another Wagon Wheel. Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars. Because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.